As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This is part two of a two-part series, so if you missed part one, I suggest you listen now. When World War II ended, rocket scientist slash devil worshipper Jack Parsons was living with his occult friends in a commune in a grand mansion on Millionaire's Row in Pasadena, California. And in August 1945, a fresh face showed up there, a former Navy lieutenant named L. Ron Hubbard, the future founder of Scientology. Parsons was immediately smitten. Parsons practiced a magic-based religion. It involved communing with gods and demons. And Hubbard was the most gifted, most natural magician Parsons ever met. Hubbard had an amazing gift for contacting otherworldly apparitions. Parsons quickly welcomed Hubbard into his commune's inner circle. And Hubbard repaid this generosity by sleeping with Parsons' young girlfriend, Betty. In fact, Betty soon ditched Parsons to date Hubbard full-time. So did Parsons kick him out of the commune? Sock him in the teeth? No. Parsons was angry, but magic was a far higher priority, and he didn't want to alienate Hubbard and his gifts. In fact, Parsons soon approached Hubbard with an offer. Parsons wanted to revive his childhood fantasy and summon a spirit from another realm, specifically a goddess named Babylon, aka the Scarlet Woman. To be blunt, the Babylon Scarlet Woman was a sex goddess. Parsons had a theory that the world then was ruled by a violent demigod. His evidence was World War II. By summoning a sex goddess from another dimension, Parsons hoped to teach the world to love. And to Parsons' shock and delight, the spell actually worked. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, sciencey history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. One reason Parsons was so delighted to meet L. Ron Hubbard was that, frankly, his professional life as a rocket scientist was in shambles. Even though, over the previous few years, he had been responsible for some major breakthroughs. Parsons secretly wanted to send astronauts to the stars, but most scientists then considered such ambitions loony. So Parsons focused on military applications, like building rocket motors to help airplanes take off faster. Parsons first tried using gunpowder, but the ingredients in gunpowder separate over time, which can cause explosions instead of a steady burn. So in the early 1940s, Parsons harkened back to his childhood. As a boy, he had taken the gunpowder inside cherry bombs and mixed in glue to keep the powder from separating. Given his inexperience then, his rockets still mostly exploded and left craters in the yard. But the idea of using glue as a binder still seemed promising. so the adult Parsons began experimenting. He finally developed a promising recipe, a mix of gunpowder, glue, cornstarch, and fertilizer. His team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory decided to test this mix in so-called JADOs, jet-assisted takeoff motors. His team bolted several JADOs under the wing of a small, lightweight aluminum plane. Like all planes then, this one had a propeller to help fly. The JPL crew snapped the propeller off. This plane would fly, or not, on jet rocket power alone. When everything was ready, an Army pilot fired up the JADO motors. Nothing happened. The motors choked. Parsons' team grumbled and tinkered, then told the pilot to try again. This attempt did not go well. One motor exploded, tearing rivets out of the wing. Shrapnel also blasted the plane's body, tearing a hole in it. The pilot was lucky to survive. But a week later, the pilot bravely climbed back into the cockpit for a third test. You can imagine Parsons pacing and holding his breath. What would go wrong this time? Nothing. The motors fired right up, and the pilot blasted down the runway. He took off at a distance 30% shorter than normal. Parsons and JPL had just launched the first ever American vehicle with jet rocket motors. Quite an achievement for a self-taught, ragtag chemist. Still, the whole experience had been dicey. The gunpowder glue mix was still prone to exploding. By June 1942, Parsons knew he needed to shift away from gunpowder. But to what? At this time, he had also been contemplating liquid fuel motors. Liquid propellants are mixed right before ignition and therefore cannot separate. Unfortunately, using liquids requires pumps, which complicated the motor. But one hot afternoon that summer, Parsons happened to see some roofers working. They were pouring asphalt, a thick, oozing liquid that solidifies into a solid. Suddenly, everything clicked. Asphalt burns readily. It's also liquid, so you can mix in other propellants. But it hardens into a solid, so nothing separates. And because it's a solid, you don't need pumps either. Asphalt combined the best of both setups. It's both fuel and glue, a brilliant combination. Parsons started experimenting immediately. He found that a mix of asphalt with potassium perchlorate burned perfectly. He finally had the rocket fuel of his dreams. Perhaps the stars weren't so far off. Unfortunately, Parsons' main funder, the Army, was less enamored. One problem with asphalt rockets is that you can't turn the motor off. Once you ignite the asphalt, it just burns, burns, burns until it runs out. That's not ideal for planes. So the Army demanded that Parsons focus on purely liquid fuel rockets. However annoyed, he obeyed. And within a few months, he achieved a second major breakthrough. Again, liquid fuel motors combine two propellants and ignite them with a spark. But it proved hard to build a reliable ignition system. So Parsons began experimenting with chemicals that ignite spontaneously upon mixing. It's like two people who can't stand to be near each other. As soon as they interact, boom! Some liquids do the same when mixed. After trying various combinations, Parsons successfully built a spontaneously burning liquid fuel motor using aniline and nitric acid. In the span of 1 year, then, Parsons invented two completely new types of motors, the basis for the first practical rocket engines. Both were low cost and high performance, what we would call disruptors today. During World War II, the U.S. military used Parsons engines in thousands of planes. The boost in speed they provided allowed planes to take off on aircraft carriers, a major advance. Planes could also now land in remote areas with short runways and rescue troops. This saved an estimated 4,500 lives during the war. Given the high demand, Parsons' JPL colleagues founded a company to manufacture motors. One suggested calling the company Superpower, but others said no. That sounded too juvenile, too much like Superman. Instead, they called the company Aerojet. It would go on to become one of the most celebrated aviation companies in history. Despite possessing zero business skills, or really any business sense, Jack Parsons became a vice president. But before long, Parsons' interest in the occult became a major liability for Aerojet. Parsons' lifestyle among the occultists in the commune was mostly harmless. He'd spend hours in the bathtub playing with toy boats. He'd greet people at the door holding a giant snake. He'd conduct seances to contact Egyptian gods. Typical shock the bourgeoisie stuff. Other activities proved more troubling. Earlier, Parsons had abandoned his wife to date her then 17-year-old sister, Betty. Other commune members were accused of sleeping with a 16-year-old boy. Neighbors spied naked pregnant women jumping through bonfires in the yard. Parsons was also making illegal bathtub absinthe, as well as taking cocaine, speed, morphine, and peyote. His many, many hungover mornings enraged other Aerojet executives. Finally, they had enough. They fired Parsons. And in truth, this was probably wise. At that point, Aerojet did not need his explosions of insight anymore. They needed the steady, reliable burn of 9-to-5 work, which was not Parsons' forte. Aerojet had business contracts and needed FBI security clearances. Parsons had to go. Still, in appreciation, Aerojet gave Parsons $11,000 in severance. However devastated about the firing, the money allowed Parsons to purchase the commune's mansion as a consolation prize. He had now come full circle. His family had lived on Millionaire's Row as a child, but had been forced to leave due to money problems. Now he had a house of his own there. People began calling it the Parsonage in his honor. And then, as mentioned before, L. Ron Hubbard showed up at the door in August 1945. Despite their romantic rivalry, Parsons latched on to Hubbard. To Parsons, rocketry and the occult were intimately intertwined. Rocketry freed the body from the surly bonds of Earth, while the occult freed the mind and soul. And with his rocketry career in shambles, the occult was all Parsons had left. So he convinced Hubbard to help him summon the sex goddess Babylon, or the Scarlet Woman. They began the summoning ritual in January 1946. As for what they actually did during it, I have read their notes and, frankly, I cannot make heads or tails of it. They consecrated a dagger, played classical music, sprinkled some blood around. Maybe you had to be there. But they swore that spooky things happened in response. A lamp fell. The electricity went out. A windstorm began. Totally unexplainable stuff. Then they waited, and soon a Scarlet Woman did walk into Parsons' life. A former Navy PR officer visited the parsonage, curious about the religious worship and magic she'd heard about from her friends. Her name was Marjorie Cameron, a vivacious woman with stark red hair. Parsons became obsessed with Cameron. After all, he thought he had summoned her from a different realm. They began a torrid affair and basically locked themselves into a room for 5 weeks of loving. Parsons sincerely thought of this sex as a magic sacrament to bring world peace. The two eventually got married. But not before L. Ron Hubbard screwed Parsons over again.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
In 1946, Hubbard approached Parsons with a business plan. Hubbard proposed buying yachts on the East Coast, sailing them to California, and selling them for a steep markup. Parsons, the poor boob, agreed. He blindly gave Hubbard his life savings, nearly $21,000. Shortly after which, Hubbard disappeared to Miami, taking Betty with him. At first, Parsons was too distracted with his scarlet woman to realize he had been scammed. When it finally dawned on him, he raced over to Miami. He found a yacht that they had purchased, the Blue Water, but not the couple. But a few nights later, the harbor called to say that Hubbard and Betty had just fled. He locked himself into his hotel room and got out his book of spells. He decided to summon a weather demon to stir up a storm. The ritual involved pentagrams and geomancy, whatever that is. And coincidentally or not, a storm really did kick up off the coast. Hubbard and Betty's yacht got clobbered. A sail was torn off. They limped back to port to find Parsons waiting for them. Parsons ended up getting some of his money back, but not all. After that, he and Hubbard parted as enemies. And while Hubbard went on to wealth and fame through Scientology, Parsons' life began unraveling. After being fired from Aerojet, Parsons wanted to get back into rocketry research. But the field had changed on him. It wasn't ragtag dreamers in the desert anymore. Businesses were popping up. The military was involved. People needed security clearances from the FBI. At first, Parsons cooperated with the FBI. He even informed on a few colleagues, ratting them out as communists. But when the FBI examined Parsons' own life, they were horrified. He read communist newspapers. He'd slept with a 17-year-old. He summoned demons. The FBI soon stripped Parsons of his clearance, meaning he could not work in rocketry. He had to take jobs as a washing machine mechanic and hospital orderly instead. Eventually, former colleagues intervened. They said Parsons was too brilliant to waste on washing machines. So the FBI relented and restored Parsons' clearance. But a few months after securing a new job, Parsons got caught stealing documents, reportedly to sell to foreign governments. He got fired again, and the FBI stripped him of a security clearance permanently. Frustrated, unable to work, Parsons soon embraced occultism completely. He declared himself the Antichrist. He also began visiting prostitutes for more sex magic rituals. The poor women must have been terrified. Before long, Parsons had to sell the parsonage, the second time he had been ejected from a home on Millionaire's Row. He moved into the coach house with his wife instead. To make money, he set up a lab in the garage where he made special effects chemicals for Hollywood. Pyrotechnics, fog, things like that. One afternoon in June 1952, Parsons got a rush order for some pyrotechnics. he headed down to the lab and started mixing chemicals. Around 5 p.m., two quick explosions rocked the neighborhood. Bang, bang. Neighbors rushed over to find a huge hole in the ceiling. The lab's windows were shattered, and the heavy garage door had been torn from its hinges. Amid this wreckage lay Parsons. His right forearm had been blown off, and half his face was missing. He died within 40 minutes. His last words were, "But I'm not finished yet." No one knows what caused the accident. Parsons had always been cavalier about danger and probably just dropped some explosives he was mixing. That caused the first bang. Dangerously, he often kept other explosives just lying around. Those probably ignited and caused the second bang. But rumors have always swirled about darker explanations. A neighbor on the scene supposedly found a syringe of morphine in the lab trash can. Was Parsons high? Others whispered that the rush order story was a cover-up. They swore he'd been driven to suicide or was trying a new magic spell. Some people even invoked conspiracies. In 1938, a crooked LA police captain had been caught planting a bomb in a detective's car. Parsons' testimony at the trial had sent the man to prison. Well, that captain had been released from prison just days before Parsons died. Was that a coincidence? Many people doubted it. Regardless, Parsons died too young, just 37 years old, and he left a complicated legacy. Occultists still revere him. In some circles, he's even given credit for attracting the first alien visitors to Earth. After all, he was a rocket scientist, and his first big ritual to summon beings from another dimension took place in 1946. UFO sightings began the very next year at Roswell, New Mexico. Surely not a coincidence. In reality, there's a much more interesting explanation for Roswell. I've actually put together a bonus episode about it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. It might surprise you to hear that the Roswell affair really did involve unidentified flying objects. Just not the type of UFOs you're probably thinking. That's patreon.com/disappearingspoon. In rocketry research, Parsons' legacy is both more precarious and more secure. Secure because he was unquestionably one of the greatest rocket scientists in history. Both his solid fuel and liquid fuel motors were big breakthroughs. NASA's Titan rockets, as well as the space shuttle, were both based on his work. When someone once referred to Wernher von Braun as the father of rocketry research, von Braun shook his head no. He insisted that Parsons deserved the name more. And yet, groups like Aerojet and JPL, groups that Parsons co-founded, are reluctant to embrace him. It's not hard to see why. Parsons was pretty loony. But maybe that looniness wasn't incidental to his genius. It can't be a coincidence that the most eccentric rocket scientist around also had the most original ideas. As they say, there's a fine line between insanity and genius. If Parsons had lived, there is no way he ever would have worked at NASA. The agency was too buttoned up, too straight-laced. In many ways, the establishment simply used Parsons, milked him for ideas, then discarded him. But Parsons sure didn't do himself any favors. He led a reckless life, and he certainly had no need to summon demons. He already had plenty of his own. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.